Hey, Fitheads, welcome to another episode of Sharing Our Pairings. This is Sharing Our Pairings, episode 98, Spotlight on My Father. I'm your host, John the Cigar Surgeon. We are broadcast live around the world on YouTube, Facebook, Cigar Federation, and, of course, picked up on the Armed Forces Radio Network. This is the show where we do pairings and cigars. Tonight we're pairing a My Father cigar. But let me introduce my co-host, Trippy Trent. Trippy Trent, what's going on, brother?
Hey there. Feeling good. Just got back from Nicaragua this weekend, which I'll talk about tomorrow, I think, on Cigar Chat.
Yeah,
so that should be fun.
Righto. And of course, we are trying a new technology tonight, which may or may not be working. I'll have to rely on you to interface with the chat room.
Of course.
Did a bunch of testing, spent really about... I'd say about 4 hours testing, 5 hours testing, and a bunch of time during the week. Troubleshooting and just making sure everything works. So, one way or the other, hopefully we have a working live stream. I think if people aren't getting the live stream on YouTube, they can certainly switch over to Facebook Live. And unfortunately, we're not in a place right now where we can respond to comments on Facebook Live. So I hope everyone is enjoying the stream. But really, we're here to talk about some of the cigars we got tonight. I am going with the... Of course, because it is Spotlight on My Father, this is the Don Pepin Garcia, My Father, J.J. Bellicoso. And Tripp, you have a great treat that is one of my favorites.
I have the number one. It's a 5.5x52 Robusto. And I actually got these from the My Father factory. They were kind of, typically when you go to a factory tour, they'll give you some sort of little gift. And in this case, it was a 5-pack of these bad boys, which are almost gone already.
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty good gift. I think I would probably blow through a 10 or 20 pack of those in easily a couple weeks. You're obviously at an accelerated pace because you can probably smoke in nicer
way than I
can.
Well, I mean, so I smoked the first one, of course, at my father.
Of course.
And then I had a 6-hour layover in LAX where I was required to leave security. So I figured, why not just smoke a cigar in the middle of the night?
Absolutely. Makes perfect sense. Oh, very tasty. So this, little bit about this, I'll talk about my cigar and you can talk about your cigar. So this is the Don Pepin Garcia, J.J. Maduro Bellicoso. Bellicoso is, this one is, been sitting in my humidor for about 3.5 years. And it's delicious. I'm really enjoying it. Nicaraguan wrapper, Nicaraguan Corojo and Criollo filler. And I think the MSRP on this is $8, although deals can be found all over the intertubes and your local B&M. Talk to your local B&M, get a deal, because there's some deals to be had. Now, the interesting thing, and I didn't know this, Ted, and maybe I'll ask you, Trip, throw you under the bus, do you know what the JJ in the JJ Bellicoso stands for?
I don't, actually. Now that I think about it, I would assume, I'm just going to throw it out there and I'm going to guess Jaime and Jose.
You know, that's not bad. That's a good guess. It is initials, and it's because of the collaboration of Jose and his son Jamie. So Jose and Jamie.
Yeah,
makes sense. And
that makes sense.
Yeah. So do you have the specs pulled up on your delicious little cigar there?
I almost do, but I mean, I've smoked the cigar enough times that I can already talk about it. It is so. One thing I actually didn't know about this is for the My Father line, Don Pepin said all of the filler is grown on their plantations.
I didn't know that.
For some of the cigars, I'm not sure about this one. I know this one has a Habano wrapper from Ecuador. I believe the binder and all of the filler tobaccos are actually from my father farms in Nicaragua.
Now, I'm sure we'll talk about it on Cigar Chat tomorrow night live, but I'm sure it was probably pretty tough to pay attention to the tour as you did. I've never been to the My Father factory, so, you know, that sounds pretty awesome to me.
Yeah, it was pretty great. Of course, Don Pepin himself speaks no English whatsoever. I do understand a little Spanish, but not very much, but he talked so slowly that I was able to understand about 30 or 40% of what he was saying.
Nice.
He, of course, had a translator, and then also Pete Johnson happened to be there. So I've met him a couple times, so he kind of filled in the parts that I didn't get from Don Pepin.
You know, I think it'd be interesting to find out, and maybe we can do this at the IPCPR, find out what everyone's comfort level with Espanol is, because you know, my comfort level with Espanol and the average person's comfort level with Espanol, and then, you know, working in the industry, you obviously have to know your Spanish.
Yeah, I believe somebody actually asked Pete, and I think it may have been somebody else, but I believe his answer was that he knows enough to order dinner and talk about cigars a little bit, but he's not fluent or anything. Like a lot, they just know enough to get a taxi to Esteli.
Yeah, I mean, really, you know, the typical Spanish: where's the bathroom? How do I get a taxi? More beers.
Yeah, exactly.
More beers. But of course, this is the pairing show, so we are talking about pairings. I'm going to adjust my camera here because I don't have... So, of course, we're doing some pairings tonight, and I'm going to kick it off here, get us in the flow of things, little special something-something. And this is, of course, one of my special malts. This is from Chichibu Distillery, and this is the Ichiro Malt MWR, the Mizunara Wood Reserve, which is super tasty. And you can see it's kind of got a golden color there. It's got some nice bands on it. Incidentally, Trippy, if you're messaging me, I have no idea. Very good. Carry on. So, holding this up. So it's got like a kind of a golden straw color there. Very tasty. Very, very delicious. And, holding that up. My dirty glass. It's not dirty. It's frosted. So that's my first pairing of the night, and I'll talk a little bit about Chichibu while you introduce your first pairing of the evening. And of course, it's, I think, as a result of being entered in the Whiskey Bible a couple of years ago, that everyone went crazy over Yamazaki, and the price skyrocketed worldwide. Of course, before then, not a lot of people had really known about Yamazaki, but it's good. So talking about the first spirit of the night, I'll grab here the my Ichiro malt. So a little bit about Chichibu. We've certainly featured them on Sharing Our Pairings in the past. We'll continue to feature them. Very young distillery, opened in 2004, founded by Ichiro Okuto, located in Chichibu City, which is where they get the name. And of course, that's in Japan. And the area is well known as being hot and humid in the summer and then freezing in the winter, which definitely imparts some interesting characteristics. I know that Scotland definitely gets quite cold and damp in the wintertime, but I wouldn't say that it gets hot and humid in the summertime. So that's very different characteristics than what you'd see out of Scotland. And the other thing is they incorporate locally grown barley, which is kind of cool. I don't know whether that changes the flavor substantially or not, but it, like I said, it's good. And Mizunara, of course, is essentially another name for Japanese oak. And we've talked about Japanese oak on the show before. It kind of imparts a very different characteristic and tends to impart a lot more wood character quicker to the spirit than an American oak or a Spanish oak. It is a vatted malt, so it's not an age statement. There's no age statement in the bottle. So it is vatted from not only different malts at the Chichibu Distillery, but also presumably the guesswork out there is that maybe some stuff from Hanyu. But it is at 46%, as we've discovered a lot of Japanese whiskeys, the sort of base floor is 43%, a lot of them at 46. So I'm going to, now that I've talked out Chichibu, I'm going to do a little sippy sip. And let me give you a chance to chat about your beverage tonight.
It is, again, aged in Mizunara barrels, just like John's. This one does have an age statement, of course, of 12 years. It's made by the Suntory Whiskey Company, and it clocks in at 43% alcohol, which is about typical for Japanese whiskeys. Uh-oh, we're getting reports of no audio again.
Well, not much we can do about it. I'm definitely showing audio on your end. We might have to tell our audience to tune into the Facebook live stream.
Oh, now it's back. Okay, so when we came back, it was working. So okay. We're good.
Probably a bit of a lag in the stream. So again, apologies to all of our live audience. As is with new and exciting new technology, sometimes it breaks. Now, you were talking, Trip, about the Yamazaki being at 40%.
what's 43. It?
43. So, 43. Okay, right. So, yeah, so that's kind of the, it's interesting because that's kind of the base floor for a lot of Japanese whiskeys, while, you know, I think they still follow the minimum rules for Scotch whiskey, which is 40%. So you'll see a lot of Scotch whiskey at 40%. But really, for Japanese whiskey, it's quite rare to see them at 40%. It's, like I said, mine's at 46, yours is at 43, and 43 is kind of pretty typical for what I've seen.
Yeah, me too. I'm not sure if there's actually a reason for that, but 43 seems to be the typical minimum for Japanese whiskeys.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm going to talk a little bit about my cigar before we have our first break here. So, because really haven't talked about it, and I'm about halfway through the first third. I can't remember if they were this good when I smoked them 3.5 years ago. I think they were, but I'll tell you, 3.5 years of age has not hurt this cigar at all. It is extremely rich, extremely smooth in the sense that it's got this wonderful chocolate note. It's got that sort of powdered cocoa mouthfeel to it, which I love, you know, nice, rich creaminess. Started out sort of what I expect out of a Don Pepin Garcia stick. Very, very spicy. And the spiciness is really let up, very creamy on the retrohale, and you know, I expect this cigar to evolve as it goes. How is the how is your delicious cigar going for you?
Just a barrel of spice, which I love. That's what I love. That's what really drew me to Don Pepin cigars in the first place.
Yep.
About 10 years ago when I started smoking them. But now, I mean, this one just has so much complexity under that spice. Mm-hmm. It's got a ton of spice, then some sweetness and some, I would say, like a baking spice kind of flavor, and then a caramel kind of sweetness.
Nice.
It's just a delightful cigar.
Those are all things that are relevant to my interests, which is why I love that cigar so much. Just a reminder to your audience, you're tuned into Sharing Pairings, episode 98, Spotlight on My Father. We're broadcast live around the world on CigarFederation.com, YouTube.com, now Facebook Live, which hopefully our Facebook Live listeners are enjoying the stream. Who knows?
Hope so.
Of course, picked up on the Armed Forces Radio Network. Sharing Our Pairings is brought to you by Gurkha Cigars. Gurkha Cigars, makers of the finest cigars in the world. Talk to your local B&M. Talk about Gurkha. I guarantee you they've probably got, any B&M in the world has got to have 4 or 5 facings. They're going to have lots of facings for you. We, of course, are talking about pairing cigars and pairing various beverages. Doesn't have to be whiskey. We're pairing various things. Tonight, we're pairing some My Father cigars. And it's good, man. Like I said, I'm positive that I did not pay $8 a stick for this. So, you know, I probably would pay $8 a stick for this, but this, I think I got them as a bundle and it was like $110 for a 20 cigar bundle, which, you know, sweet deal.
Oh, that is a steal.
Mm-hmm. So since I am smoking and drinking, I'm going to go back to my whiskey here and talk a little bit about the notes and let you talk about your whiskey. So as with a lot of Japanese whiskey, what I find with Japanese whiskeys, some people don't like them. Some people really like them. I particularly like Japanese whiskey. I find that it tends to be a little bit softer, a little bit more nuanced than Scotch whiskey. You know, the malt itself is not as estery as alcohol-y, so it doesn't give you that deep alcohol burn. Even at 46%, this is very, very sessionable. And on the nose, I get tons of stone fruit, like a little bit of pear, a little bit of peach, a little bit of vanilla. I mean, just delicious. I'm going to take some more sips and refresh my mind of how delicious this is. And Trip, I'll let you talk about how the first beverage is going for you.
Yeah, I kind of missed out on talking about it in the first place because of our technical difficulties. So like you were saying, Japanese whiskey mimics Scotch, but there are some distinct differences. I find them, like you said, a little softer, but also a little less sweet. A lot of the Highlands whiskeys can be very, very fruit forward.
Yep.
And even though this is fruit forward, it's not like that honey kind of sweetness that's almost biting. So what I get from this, it starts off with a ton of like peach and pineapple fruitiness. And then on the finish, there's some maybe cinnamon and apple and just a touch of like spice, like you would get from a rye or something like that, just a touch of it on the finish. I think it pairs fantastically with this cigar.
Now, talking about your cigar pairing there, because Don Pepin Garcia sticks typically are quite spicy, and like you said, I mean, I would put them at the far end of the spectrum for spiciness.
Mm-hmm.
How are you finding the spice from the whiskey and the spice from the cigar kind of interplaying there?
I think it goes together really well because the whiskey sort of calms the spice of the cigar down a little bit. It okay. doesn't seem quite as intense and peppery.
Interesting.
After a sip of the whiskey.
Well, I definitely find, I mean, we're having very different whiskey experiences because mine is absolutely what I would sort of describe as a very typical Speyside whiskey. So it's got a lot of the fruity quality. It's very sweet, not overly sweet like you were describing. I don't think with Japanese whiskey, you're really not going to find prominent flavors. That is, everything is kind of mm-hmm. nuanced and balanced, which I dig. And again, part of the reason why I like Japanese whiskey, it does a great job of sort of contrasting, does a great job of complementing this cigar because the fruitness, the sweetness is not overrunning the sweetness I'm getting from the Maduro, from the wrapper. And if anything, I'm actually getting more spice from the cigar after taking a sip from the whiskey, which is nice because the spice really has fallen to the background. And the creaminess is not being run over. Like typically, you know, I might find if the creaminess on a cigar is really subtle, it might get run over by the harshness, the alcohol from the whiskey. And I'm not mm-hmm. finding that here at all.
Yeah, I can definitely see that with a whiskey like that.
So very good. I don't know if it's my pairing of the night, but I don't necessarily need to move on to my second whiskey yet.
That's exactly what I was gonna say is we don't have to move on. We can just keep drinking this and I'll be happy.
Be the longest short pour episode we've ever done. Because typically a short pour episode runs 20 minutes and a regular cigar chat, whether you're sharing our pairings, goes 58 minutes. But, you know, whatevs, it's all good. I am going to get into my second whiskey here. And the nice thing about doing 98 episodes of sharing our pairings is I can kind of cheat in the show prep because there is some information there that, you know, I don't have to go back and research again. But this whiskey I've never featured in the show before, which is really a darn shame. So this is the Glenfarclas 105. One of my favorites, and you know, I do occasionally drink some highfalutin whiskey on the show. This is not at all a highfalutin whiskey in any shape, manner, or form. It is very affordable. I think typically you can get this for maybe $50-$55, which is remarkable for a cask strength whiskey. But check out the color on that. Not the color necessarily tells you everything about whiskey because they can color it, but it's got a really golden, dark golden color to it. Just looking over and make sure my beer is not frozen. We're good. Little bit about Glenfarclas. They are a Speyside distillery. They were founded in 1836. They are currently owned by the J&G Grant family. They use water from the Ben Rennis Mountain. And some of the neighboring distilleries are Ben Rennis, Craganmore, and Dale Uain. I'm sure I screwed up the pronunciation there, but I've got it as Dale Uain, which I've never heard before, so must be either a small distillery that only does local bottlings, or I'm just out of touch with that distillery. What's cool is they are, because they're a family-owned, they're not a sort of a big corporate entity. From what I've read at maltmadness.com, they've got a fantastic welcome guest center, and a glorious tasting room, which, you know, sounds fantastic to me.
Yeah, that sounds like a place I'd like to go.
So I'm going to come back to the specs on this and let you talk about your second pairing of the night.
So as you said, I'm doing another spirit. And it's something that I've had a lot of in recent history, which is Florida Caña 7-year.
Love it.
Now they actually have a new 7-year that I was afraid to buy since I had some layovers and I didn't want to, lose my bottle because I took it through the wrong checkpoint or mm-hmm. something like that. But I've since done some research, and in March I'm going to be coming back with a bottle of 7-year Blanco.
What's going on in March?
So we're going on a little thing called Cigar Safari.
A what?
And I just got back from Nicaragua, and I'm already I'm ready to go now. I'm ready to leave tomorrow.
Nice.
But anyway, they now have a 7-year age Blanco. From what I've read, they basically take the classic 7-year Gran Reserva that I'm drinking here, and they run it through filters to filter out all color, all sediment, everything that makes the 7-year the 7-year. And I tried to order it, but every time I tried, they gave me vodka. So my Spanish needs a little work. But from what I've heard, it's pretty good.
So now, quick question for you, because my understanding of Blanco rum is Blanco rum usually refers to rum that has been aged in steel barrels, not, you know, oak barrels or wood barrels, which is really what imparts the color. So it's curious to me, and I'm really at a loss as to why you would take rum that's been aged in barrels and filter all of that goodness out.
That's the question.
Yeah, that's weird.
Everybody says that it's really good, but I'm not familiar with it enough to say what makes it special. At least not yet. I'm sure
now,
I will be.
Now, you said that was at the duty free, or
yeah. So they during Puro Sabor, two of their major two sponsors for liquor, well, the only two sponsors for liquor, were Florida Caña and Chivas Regal.
Makes sense.
And the only rums they were pouring were the classic 7-year, Blanco 7-year, and the 12-year.
So you had a chance. You had a chance to sample quite a few then.
Oh yeah. And but I didn't get a chance to sample the Blanco 7 because at first somebody had told me it's terrible, don't try it, and then people were raving about it later in the week. And again, every time I ordered it, the guy just brought me vodka.
So I feel like what happened there is someone maybe either was telling you the truth and everyone else was lying about how good it was, or someone found out it was really good and they wanted to keep the stash to themselves and they didn't want you or anyone else touching it.
I think you're onto something there.
Oh.
But then I saw it in the duty free, and I mean, Florida Caña is so cheap in Nicaragua. It's amazing.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
A bottle of it in the duty free is $12.
What?
Now, it's crazy.
Now, Serda, because this is actually really interesting, and I want to talk about this because, I mean, there's so many aspects of this that's really curious. So I don't remember, because I think if I remember right, at the duty free, when you land in Managua, you can get the 18-year, 2-bottle special or whatever, and you know it's like $40 plus. I don't remember what a 7-year cost. Is that like, is the Blanco?
I think a 7-year is 12 or 14 a bottle.
So the Blanco is not much more expensive then?
No, the Blanco is about the same price as the regular 7.
Interesting.
But I'll make sure to pick up a bottle on the way into Nicaragua for Safari, and then I'll probably pick up a bottle or two on the way out.
Absolutely. Anyways, sorry to interrupt your spiel. Yeah. Please carry on.
So after all that, so this is the classic 7-year, aged in bourbon barrels and for 7 years. And it's the pride of Nicaragua. Anywhere you go in Nicaragua, this is what people are drinking.
Yeah.
The difference that I actually just learned this trip, in Nicaragua, if you order a glass of the 7-year, it is always going to be 35% ABV.
Really?
I can't explain why, but inside the country, it's all the 7-year at least is 35%. So this is the export version, which is 40%.
So now that's interesting, Trip, because I know that in Mexico, there is legislation regarding, and this might be completely off topic in comparison, but I know in Mexico, a lot of the tequilas are low ABV as well. In fact, I don't think you can bottle a tequila above 40%. And the explanation that I was given was, you know, because it's a hot, sort of a very hot, humid climate, they don't want people drinking high ABV spirits because A, presumably you get hammered a lot quicker, and B, yes, you know, potentially someone could pass out. And I'm wondering, you know, that'd be a good question for Florida Caña, is to like, is there any relation to that, or is there some taste aspect, or what's the deal?
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what the reason is. I know that I'm not sure about the 12. I know the 25 is 40% or above there. So it may not be a limit, but I mean, the reasoning stands that you don't want people walking around drinking a glass of 40% alcohol all day.
Mm-hmm. So I guess this would probably be the time for me to let you have a sippy, and it's a little more complicated because now I got to do camera control and all kinds of fancy doohickeys, but I'll do my best here.
We fancy.
Getting back to my Glenfarclas 105 cask strength. So I've had quite a few sips. It's really good. And it's so here's the interesting thing. We're talking about different ABVs tonight. We've had a 46% ABV Japanese whiskey. You've had a 43% Japanese whiskey. You're about to get into a rum at 40%. And I'm just kicking it way up here with a 60% ABV scotch, which, you know,
ooh.
Yeah, it's a beast. And that's, I'll talk about cask strength in just a minute, but the 105 is matured in a combination of ex-bourbon oak barrels, which is very common in the scotch industry. Like the number one barrel they use is an ex-bourbon barrel. But they also do use, so they basically vat two 105s together. One is the ex-bourbon, and then they also use one that's been aged in ex-Spanish oak, either containing Oloroso or Pinot sherry. And you know I love that sherry.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it is no age statement, but the rumor, and I think on their website, they say that, you know, we tell you that we age it for at least 8 years, which is weird because if they age it for at least 8 years, then they should be able to put an age statement in the bottle. So that leads me to believe that, in fact, you know, some of the product going in there is younger than 8 years. Some of it's older than 8 years. Maybe it averages out to 8 years. But of course, by law, the minimum age statement on the bottle is the youngest whiskey that can go in that bottle. So I don't know what that means, but I digress. So talking about the nose, they do talk about having an oaky nose with apples and pears and dark toffee. And maybe they're just putting it in my head, but I definitely get a lot of oaky component on the nose. And I'm definitely getting that pear. It's kind of that almost sweet sour pear. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. It's not overly sweet. And then I'll take a sip here and I'll try to put it on split camera just so I don't look silly. I mean, maybe I'm just used to drinking 60+% ABV, but it's definitely got that that Oloroso sherry spice to it. It's got a really oily mouthfeel to it, which I love. So very coating, you know. And it's either the oily mouthfeel or the high ABV alcohol that I don't feel. I need, like, I don't want to just take a sip. I want to take a sip, take a puff from my cigar. But it's got that really good balance between sort of the vanilla and bright fruit quality from the bourbon with that nice spicy rich stewed fruit from the Oloroso sherry or Pinot sherry. And they are in good combination. You know, the sherry component doesn't run it over. So I'm going to take a couple puffs of my cigar here and let you talk about how that delicious Florida Canyon is working for you.
I just love Florida Canyon. I had never had it until the first time I went to Nicaragua. And now I just can't get enough of it.
Mm-hmm.
It starts off with kind of a bourbon quality. And as I think I've said on the show before, I've given people a glass of Florida Canyon and said, what is that? And they say bourbon every time. Because it's the color of bourbon and it's got a lot of bourbon character mm-hmm. from those barrels. But then after that initial like smoky, sweet bourbon flavor, there's some like a toasted almond kind of flavor and some very pronounced toasted coconut, which goes really well with the spiciness of the cigar.
Now, I'm a bit of a snob sometimes when it comes to spirits, and I tend to really enjoy the 12 year and the 18 year. And sometimes I find with the 7 year, it can be, how shall I put this? The it's a little alcohol forward, you know what I mean? Like,
yes,
the,
absolutely.
Now, are you finding that with, and I guess, first of all, well, I guess you haven't tried the Blanco, you said, yet.
No.
Okay, so that's interesting.
But I've tried all the others.
But yeah, definitely have tried all the others, including an up to, I think I've tried the 25, but we'll get back to that. How is the that component of the 7? Like, do you find that that's got a lot of alcohol-y, estery quality to it?
Not too bad, but it's definitely there, right at the front. It's kind of the first thing you taste is alcohol, and then left over at the finish is the alcohol burn.
Well, I can tell you that on mine, and again, you know, maybe I'm just becoming just a horrible whiskey person where I'm just blowing my palate out by all these 60% alcohol scotches. This is very drinkable at 60%. I would not water this down. And it's interesting because you really get that sort of Oloroso spicy sherry up front, and it doesn't linger very long. I do get a bit of a long finish on the tongue, not on the throat. And it's nice because, like, it's, again, it's kind of that nice bright fruity, you know, like a pineapple kind of peach fruitiness, like a bright fruitiness. And it's lingering. Even when I take two or three draws of this cigar, which, you know, the cigar has a lot of flavor to it. I'm still tasting that whiskey two or three puffs later, and the cigar is really not running the whiskey over. And I'm surprised actually that this whiskey is not running over the cigar. How's the strength balance for you on the Florida Canyon with that, the My Father?
Well, I just want to say first, that's the beauty of cask strength spirits, is that that the finish lasts so long that they typically pair really well with the cigar.
I agree.
Unless they're completely blowing out your palate, which with Scotch is pretty rare for a cask strength, they're sticking around. So you've got two or three puffs of the cigar where you're still getting the flavors. But anyway, back to mine. Now that I'm taking another sip, I get a lot of caramel.
Yum.
So it's the caramel, it's the smoke, it's the toasted coconut kind of flavors that are the story here, and it's. I mean, this is just another really good pairing.
Yeah.
I don't think you – I mean, I didn't think I could beat the Yamazaki, but this might edge it out a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, first of all, I feel like Florida Canyon, whether it's the 7, the 12, the 18, whatever, it's almost reaching that point where it's kind of cheating. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, it goes too well with cigars.
It just goes too well with cigars. And I mean, the same is absolutely true of coffee. Like, we don't do a lot of coffee shows, partially because there is some complexity there. We will do some short pours again with coffee. But coffee is just a natural pairing with cigars. Even strong cigars, coffee can range from a Connecticut all the way up to, you know, just the most spiciest strong cigar that's going. And I kind of feel like some rum does. Florida Canyon for me is always just kind of a natural pairing. Like, it's a no-brainer pairing. It's hard to go wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very difficult to go wrong with it.
Mm-hmm. Just want to remind our audience, you're tuned into Sharing Our Pairings, episode 98, Spotlight on My Father. We're broadcast live around the world on CigarFederation.com, YouTube, which is hopefully still working great, and Facebook Live. Thanks for all our Facebook Live listeners who have tuned in. And of course, we are picked up on podcasts. You can subscribe via iTunes, Podbean, or pretty much any podcast catcher out there. I tend to listen to a lot of podcasts on the road because I do a lot of driving. And that's all I have right there. So getting back to the pairing, I don't want to move on. That's kind of like,
I'm kind of my happy place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So we're talking about age statement, talking about cask strength whiskey. So the thing, of course, about cask strength whiskey, which we've talked about in previous episodes, but I'll kind of do a quick refresher. The nice thing about cask strength whiskey for me is that you're essentially getting undiluted spirit. And by that, I mean the spirit goes in the barrel, the spirit goes in the bottle. Now, obviously, if you think about 40%, 60%, 20% of the bottle of the alcohol, literally for every, if my math is right, for every two bottles you pour, you could have gotten, if you brought that down to 40%, you could have gotten an extra bottle. So you are losing from a financial perspective, and whiskey manufacturing, whiskey distilling is a very expensive process, especially to start up. So to offer a 60% product, you are kind of losing a little bit of money in the sense that you could sort of bring that down to 40%. But for me, and I know, Tripp, you have strong feelings about this too, I find cask strength is not just an alcohol thing, it's a flavor thing. And I find that cask strength gives me the undiluted, true nature of that spirit.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's, you're getting the spirit as it comes out of the barrel. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say that you should always drink cask strength whiskey straight. It's that they're giving you a choice. So if the 40% version or 43% version or whatever the normal bottling is, if you can just get a little extra flavor from that by adding a couple drops of water, or you can drink it as it comes out of the barrel at cask strength, which I think is, in my opinion, is the way to drink it. But sometimes they're a little hot.
Yeah, they are. They can be. Go ahead.
There are some that are a little hot, and the intention there, when they're bottling it, is you're going to want to add a little water to that one.
Yeah, and in fact,
it's not all made to drink straight.
Yeah, I mean, quick anecdote. So I've been to Scotland, which is actually where my you know, if you historically look back at my family, I'm a Scottish import. And so I was in Edinburgh, and it was kind of a funny experience because, you know, I'm doing the whiskey mile. You got to do the whiskey mile, and I'm going into a pub there and I ordered a whiskey. And I don't even remember what whiskey it was. It's just kind of whatever. And if I remember right, it was either at 40% or 43%. And the guy says, you know, do you want some water with that? Which, you know, I guess, and I don't know if it's just that the pub thing or if it's an Edinburgh thing or if it's a Scottish thing in general, they do water the whiskey down from 43 down to 30 or 35. And, you know, I kind of looked at him like, well, no, I'm good. And he's like, oh, you're a tough guy, huh? And I'm like, no, not particularly. I just, you know, I prefer my whiskey at, you know, 40, 43% because that's, to me, that's super drinkable. But the impression I was left with was that, you know, they do typically water the whiskey down because that's a lot more sessionable for them.
Yeah. And it's the same way in Nicaragua, actually. When we, I mean, I won't talk about this too much, but we got at one of the places that we went, we ordered a bottle of 25.
Mm-hmm.
And the waiter asked if we wanted Coke with that.
Wow.
Which in my mind, that's like, that's insane.
That's a crime.
But in Nicaragua, that's just how they drink it. They just add a little Coke no matter which kind of rum they're getting.
Yeah, the one of the first phrases, and I'm going to sort of jack this up because I've been super busy at work and haven't been upkeeping on my Espanol, but I believe it's sin hacial, which is without ice. And it's a phrase I learned because, you know, when I do find that not just in Nicaragua, when I travel to Cuba or when I travel anywhere else, and even really here, by default, people want to serve any kind of alcohol spirit, whether it's bourbon, whether it's rum, whether it's scotch, they want to put it over ice. And, you know, you can have your drink any way you want, but I'm not putting ice in it. And I'm certainly not putting ice in a 25-year-old rum.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was another thing. That was actually difficult. It was difficult to get across, like, at these big galas and stuff, each table had their own waiter.
Yeah.
And the last night at the big fancy gala.
Fancy.
I could not get a glass of rum that didn't have ice in it. Every way I asked for it, this guy brought me ice.
Yeah, that is absolutely why one of the first phrases I looked up was, how do I order any sort of drink without ice? Because, you know, I don't want ice. Like, I don't want ice. Even on, yeah. Even, you know, even though I drink a 7-year, I probably don't want to drink it with ice. It's just
yeah, unless it's real hot out and you're in the sun, I don't need ice.
No, I don't need ice. So I'm going to get into my last pairing of the night, and it's a company that I featured a little while ago. And Rob isn't on the show anymore, but it is from his people. And I'm going to try and do the pronunciation as best as I can because it is Norwegian. And it's Nugne U. And Nugne U is from Grimstad, Norway. They've made their way all the way to Canada. I've had a few of their offerings. They're good. And essentially it means Naked Island. Now, it's not quite as sort of salacious as you might think. It basically means that it's a barren island. There's no vegetation. There's no trees. It's just a rock. It's a rock on the water. So, you know, not quite.
That's a lot less sexy than I was figuring.
It's way less sexy. But they have a cool mission statement. Their mission is to create fantastic full-bodied and handcrafted beer. They use knowledge, quality, and a constant search for new flavors to make one of the world's leading craft breweries. This particular beer is a beast, which is why I saved it for last. There's no ice crystal forming, and I'll explain why there's no ice crystals forming in just a quick second. But what I like about their beers is it does have a really nice sort of crafted taste to it. They're all very, very good. This is the Adventurous Brown, which is from my advent calendar. So I ended up picking up, because the Scot in me wanted to get a good deal. So I ended up getting one of the advent calendars. You know, it wasn't fashionable to buy the advent calendar. So they dropped the price by, I don't know, 20%, 30%. So
there we go.
I was all over that, always looking for a deal. But this bad boy, which you can see, they call it a brown ale, but I'll tell you what, that is dark and delicious. I mean, you would not, looking at that color, you would not call that a brown ale.
I'd call that a porter.
That's pretty much, yeah, that's pretty much approaching porter quality level. And there's a reason for that. It's 10% ABV. It's a Ooh. Beast, yeah.
It's a heater.
It's a heater. So, you know, I might get, we've only got about 15 minutes left in the show, but who knows, I could get pretty goon by the end of the show on 10%. But you know, I don't have a detailed list of the IBUs or the original gravity or anything fancy. Cause unfortunately not a list on the website. All I have is it uses local water, malted barley, malted wheat, Muscovado sugar, which I have no idea what Muscovado sugar is. I've never heard of that before, but hops and yeast. And, it smells fantastic. It smells funky. It's like, It's like an IPA meets like a Scotch ale.
So if you can imagine, tasty.
Yeah, I mean, if you can imagine those flavors in your mind, this sort of rich, alcohol forward, sweet, super sweet Scotch ale with like that sort of slightly hoppy IPA. I'm eager to take a sip, so I'm going to do that while you introduce your last beverage of the night.
So before I introduce my beverage, I do know what Muscovado sugar is, thanks to Alton Brown.
Drop a knowledge.
It's sort of like turbinado sugar, where it's those big, like brown, flaky crystals.
I gotcha.
But they don't remove the molasses, so it's like a almost like dark brown sugar where it's sticky. It's kind of like that, only with much larger, like turbinado style crystals.
I can dig it.
So, on to my last pairing. I have Ninkasi, who I've featured over and over again.
Love them.
This is their Dawn of the Red. It started off as a seasonal they did in 2014, and now it is one part of their flagship line, which is kind of what they call their maybe 6 year-round beers. So this is a Imperial Red, or I can't get it right, India Red Ale. So it's basically an IPA that's got a little bit more of that roasty malt backbone.
Nice.
Clocks in at 66 IBUs, so it's
not bad.
So it's up there.
Up there.
Only 7% alcohol, which in this neck of the woods is about normal.
So super sessionable.
Yeah. The original gravity is 1072. Usually there's a dot in there somewhere.
Yeah, it should be like 10.70.
Yeah, well, it should be 1.072.
There we go.
They go into their malts, which are two-row pale, Cara Red, which is where the red color comes from, Crystal Malt, which is, of course, a classic. It's
classic.
Almost in everything.
Yeah.
Flaked Barley and Black Malt. So that's kind of where that reddish hue comes from. For the hop bill, it's got Galena, Millennium, Autanum, which I'm not familiar with, Eldorado, and Mosaic. And I'm drinking it out of, I've been meaning to talk about this for weeks, my Spieglau glass. This is the, they call it the IPA glass. They say it was designed by some scientists and people from Dogfish Head and Sierra Nevada. So it's got all these little features. So it's got, from what they say in the marketing materials, it's got a nucleation point at the bottom, which I've never seen. No beer that I've ever put in here has any kind of reaction to that nucleation
point. I never see it myself.
I've seen it in Belgians before.
Yeah.
But I don't drink a lot of Belgians, at least not out of glassware like this.
No.
And then what they say is that as you drink it, it hits these ribs, and that causes it to kind of fizz up, so you get a little bit more of the nose after every sip. But the important thing is I just really like drinking beer out of this glass. I bought one maybe 3 years ago, and my wife knocked it over next to the sink repeatedly, just over and over again. She kept saying, like, I knocked your glass over, but it didn't break, because they're made out of some sort of like sapphire crystal glass. They're actually really, really resilient. But eventually she smashed it. And so then I bought a new one. And then eventually she smashed that one too. So for my birthday last year, she bought me 4 of them.
Nice.
So she's got 3 more strikes before I have 1 left.
Well, I can tell you I had a similar experience, actually. My girlfriend accidentally broke one, and she was pretty upset about it. I did buy a 4-pack. I ended up buying another 4-pack just to complete the set, so to speak. So I've got a lot of those glasses. But it does take a drop from, like, chest height on a tile floor to smash them. They are – I do find them very resilient. And I think the idea behind the ribbing on there is to increase or move the beer around. And it's supposed to increase the aromatics. From what I understand.
Yeah, so every time you take a sip, it kind of falls back into the bottom here and ends up, you get a little bit more aromatics from it.
Nice.
Which I find works pretty well.
I mean, yeah, I'm a big fan. And, you know, I mean, obviously I'm a big fan of glassware. We're doing some Glencairns earlier for the whiskeys and the rum. But I'm all a big fan of. Now, I'm just, because I was told that I should just pour this in a lager glass. So I have. I've just poured this in a lager glass. And first of all, I've drank quite a bit of it already. And that should tell you something. It's really good. I'm going to have a tough time tonight, I think, picking my favorite pairing of the night. I'm really, really stuck. Because it's just got this, it, like I said, I think it is a great combination between, it's got a little bit of hoppiness to it, but barely detectable. I think if I were to guess in the IBUs, I'd say it's got to be around 20, 25 at most. And it does have this really rich molasses-like sweetness, but it doesn't linger. And at 10% alcohol, it is not super boozy. You know, like sometimes you can have a 10% alcohol beer and it's just super boozy, like almost too boozy actually. And I worry about pairing something that high ABV, especially with a cigar, because that booziness can really take away from the cigar. Not so in this case. This is a great pairing. And like I said, I'm really torn because I've got three radically different flavor profiles off my beverages. And this Nugna is this Adventurous Brown has just got this really rich, complex sweetness to it that, again, pairs really well with this JJ Bellicoso. Now that I've given you some time, how is that beer holding up?
This is just a great beer, in my opinion. It's exactly what the tin says. It's an IPA that's got a little bit of that roastiness from a red ale. And I feel like they just mix together so well. That being said, I don't think it's the best pairing for this cigar. I do think a brown would have gone a little bit better, or a porter. Because for a cigar like this, I think there's enough nuance in the cigar that the bitterness of the hops kind of blows out your palate just a little bit. Mm-hmm. And you don't end up getting all of those delicious nuances. You kind of just get the spice and a little sweetness.
Yeah, I almost feel like hoppiness is almost like Ligero, where a little bit will go a long way. And I kind of find that, you know, certainly we've talked about IPA pairing in previous shows, and sometimes the IPA pairing has gone really well, like with the fire-cured tobacco or other styles of cigars. But I can definitely dig where you're coming from, because IPAs are typically a pairing I kind of shy away from unless I kind of know what I'm getting into. Unfortunately, the thing with bitterness and with hops really is that it can just sort of take over the flavor profile and just, you know, run the cigar right over, frankly.
Yeah, and that's definitely what I'm getting here.
So, again, talking about this pairing, this Adventurous Brown, I think brown ale and this JJ Bellicoso, no question. And I think even at a lower ABV, like a 7.2, 7.5, a brown ale would be a natural pairing for this. You get that nice sweetness. It's not too sweet. You get a little bit of alcohol, not too much alcohol. It allows the cigar to sort of continue to deliver the flavor profile that's there. So going back to your pairing, now that you've had a chance to clear your palate, any changes there?
No, I still think the hops are just a little much for this cigar.
But great beer.
Great beer, great cigar, but they just don't play together that well.
Mm-hmm. So we've paired quite a few different spirits. We've paired a beer, which, you know, it's always nice, I find. We've got a few spirits, throw a beer in there just to kind of have an alternative flavor profile, maybe something at a lower ABV. Where do the pairings sit for you tonight in terms of your favorites?
I mean, the Florida Con is obviously a no-brainer. Mm-hmm. But I think the complexity of the Yamazaki edges it out a little bit. Because you still get the complexity from both the cigar and the whiskey, which obviously you don't get from the beer. And Florida Cognac is just not all that complex compared to a 12-year-old Japanese whiskey.
For sure. Now, let me ask you this, because you had the Florida Cognac 7. Do you think the Florida Cognac 12 or the Florida Cognac 18 would perform better or worse or similar with that particular cigar?
I think the 18 would go really well with it. I think the 18 would beat out the Yamazaki, no question.
Wow, okay.
Should have picked up a bottle of that.
Well, I've got two bottles, so, you know, we can definitely do a Redux show. I think looking back, I'm really torn. I certainly not through any proficiency on my part. I kind of picked these three spirits because I wanted the three beverages, because I wanted to try and get a different flavor profile for each and kind of run this cigar through down the gamut. I think the Ichiro Mizunaro Wood Reserve is a great way to go if you're looking for a spirit, but you don't want a spirit to take over your profile. There's no question to me, even at 46%, it did a great job of supporting all the flavor profile in the cigar, but really letting the cigar kind of take the forefront of the flavor profile. With the Glenfarclas 105 cask strength, I think the nice thing about cask strength is it does match the cigar flavor for flavor, but because that sherry note is kind of muted a little bit or pulled back by having that ex-bourbon flavor in there, it's balanced. It's very balanced with the cigar, but equal strength. So kind of equal strength to equal strength. And then going into the Nugna-U, the Adventurous Brown, it's a totally different flavor profile. If you like beers, I think, like I said, a brown ale is kind of a no-brainer. And I suspect, and you kind of already said that a brown ale might be the way to go, yeah?
Yeah, I think a brown ale would go really well with this. Like this kind of profile, the really spicy with a little bit of sweetness and some sort of indescribable complexity. Like the thing that I think I've said this about, I think I was saying it about Aganorsa tobacco mm-hmm. a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. It's got that like meaty umami flavor, yep. And I think that goes really well with a brown ale.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, really, the thing with my father, and you know, it'd be very exciting to see the factory because I pretty much love all the stuff they produce. I mean, you do kind of have to like cigars at the fuller end of the spectrum with a little bit more beef to them, a little bit more spice, but I do. So that works really well. And, I think looking back on the 98 episodes we've done, there's certainly been some shows where we've had a more full-flavored, full-bodied cigar, and it's a little bit tougher to pair with. I think, like you said, other than the red IPA, I think, it shows that there's some versatility there, even though it's a stronger cigar. I think you have a lot of different options where the spirit or the beverage isn't going to get necessarily run over by the cigar. And in fact, I guess you've kind of found the opposite because really in your case, the beer was kind of interfering with the cigar.
Yeah, absolutely. Which is surprising because, I mean, these are pretty full bodied cigars. I mean, like you said, my father, I think the lightest thing that they make that's in one of their own lines is the My Father Connecticut.
Yep.
Which, I mean, for Connecticut, it's crazy strong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So I'm trying to stall because I really can't figure out what my favorite is. but I have to pick a favorite. It's not like picking a favorite child because I don't have any children, so it's easy for me. I'm going to have to go with the Glenfarclas 105 cask strength. It's got that full flavor profile. The price is super reasonable. I think number two is going to be a tie. I'm going to cheat and say it's a tie. The Adventurous Brown is really tied with that Japanese whiskey that I had. And I could definitely see this being a revisit pairing to try a bunch of different Japanese whiskeys. I think it's got a lot of versatility in it, really.
Yeah. I mean, my father, it's just surprising because my father, I mean, we're smoking two completely different cigars from
Very
my father. I mean, mine is, I don't know how old, but maybe 6 months or so. I mean, they've never left Nicaragua. And yours is old. And it's surprising the amount of range that they have. But I think I think any My Father cigar we picked up, we'd be able to pair with these whiskeys and beers. Well, your beer, not mine.
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear based on the and it's funny to me in a way that the beer pairing was one of the most challenging pairings of the night because so often on the show we'll pivot to a beer pairing just because beer can go really well with cigar, especially, you can go lighter beers, you can go medium beers. I don't know. I think, even stepping up to a porter that's not so in your face would go really, really well as long as the sort of espresso quality in there wasn't too overpowering. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I could see that.
I could definitely see that. So, very successful show. And of course, we are going to be back tomorrow night. We're going to have Cigar Chat. Now, we are going to have to move the time up a little bit to accommodate my scheduling, not anyone else's scheduling, because I have double booked myself and fortunately did not look at my calendar. But I'm going to be attending a Chef Showdown, which Ooh. I'm very excited about. I've never attended a Chef Showdown experience before. So kind of super excited for that. That's taking place tomorrow night, but we will have Cigar Chat. We'll have our time posted on the front of CigarFederation.com. We'll update our Facebook Live and our YouTube time to let everyone know when that's going to be, but we'll be back tomorrow night for sure. And Tripp, you can talk a little bit about your trip to the Puro Sabor Festival.
Yeah, I'm going to give a little recap. I've got like a post coming that's going to be kind of long-winded, but it's a little easier to just talk about it than write about.
And I mean, obviously, I'm really sad that I missed it. I had to work on my birthday, which was last weekend, and really, that's not why I missed Puro Sabor. I had to work. Otherwise, yeah. I would have loved to be.
Otherwise, you would have been there for your birthday.
Absolutely. And I've already kind of blocked off that time next year. So I'm really hoping that I can be down at the Puro Sabor Festival next year in Nicaragua. Because I think that's going to be the fourth year next year, something like that.
Oh, tomorrow next year is going to be the seventh year. This was the sixth.
That's just embarrassing that I've been to Nicaragua as many times as I have, and I've not been able to make it down to the Puro Sabor Festival. So I'll definitely have to check that out.
It's fantastic.
But, you know, thanks everyone who tuned in live on Facebook, everyone who tuned in live on YouTube, all of our podcast listeners out there. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for subscribing. And of course, I want to say a big thanks out to our Armed Forces Radio Network listeners as we move into 2017 here. Thanks very much for your support. Hope you're out there staying safe. And as Robbie was always used to say, thanks for doing things that we are not trained or geared to do, keeping us safe.
We are not built to do.
We're not built to do that. No, it's not my thing. I'm built to sit here and, you know, wax poetic about cigars and beverages. But
exactly.
As we were saying, sharing our pairings, I want you to drink better, but drink less.